Defense analysts say there's a new arms race as countries around the world race to develop drone technology. Drones, of course, are remotely controlled aircraft that can be used for spying or can be armed to drop bombs. The U.S. has had a monopoly on drones, using them to fight insurgents in Afghanistan and to strike alleged al-Qaeda leaders in the Middle East and Africa. Drones were also reportedly used to track down and kill the radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen. But now countries including China and Iran are testing drones for their own use and for sale. And potential buyers aren't just nations. They're also Mexican drug cartels and Islamist groups like Hezbollah. Peter Singer is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, where he's also director of the 21st Century Defense Initiative. His latest book is Wired for War, The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century. Peter, as the title of your book indicates, drones are essentially robots. They can be as large as a regular airplane or tiny, and you control them remotely. So if you use a drone, no pilot is at risk.
Exactly. And that idea of not having the human go into harm's way is just a major game changer. It's a game changer in everything from the individual experience of going to war. So the notion that someone can be engaging in combat, but the most dangerous part of their day is driving into work, to what it means for the nation itself, how this idea of being able to carry out acts of violence without having to send sons or daughters into harm's way means that it's changing sort of the political calculations of where we carry out combat activities, what we see as a war or not.
And how is the Obama administration expanding the use of drones in war?
Well, it's boomed. We now are operating unmanned aerial systems in six different countries, in Iraq and Afghanistan, also in Libya, in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, where, again, the scale is pretty large. In Pakistan alone, unmanned aerial systems have carried out more than 300 airstrikes. This would have been what we called a war in the past. More than 300 airstrikes, you know, that's several times the size of the opening round of the Kosovo War. But, you know, we don't call it the Pakistan War. And I think in part it's because of this technology that we're using.
So it makes war seem more sanitized in a way.
It certainly is changing the way we think about what it means to go to war and what authorization you need for it. I mean, I think we've seen a graphic example of that this month, where the president said he was sending 100 U.S. troops on the ground in Central Africa, not to engage in combat, but just to advise local forces there in the hunt for the LRA, which is this rebel group on the ground there. And he sought congressional authorization for that. By contrast, the Libya operation, he did not seek congressional authorization for. So at least in terms of how the president's looking at it, how Congress responded, how the media and the public looks at it, what matters most and when you need authorization is putting boots on the ground, not whether you're engaging in combat or not. And that's a really new way of thinking about war and the public's relationship to it.
And this is not only the United States now using drones. Talk a bit about some of the other countries that are getting into this area.
Absolutely. This technology is proliferating. It is a global technology. At least 45 other countries right now are building, buying, and using military robotics. And I think a parallel to think about is that this technology, you know, isn't something like an aircraft carrier. It isn't something like the atomic bomb. It isn't something where you need a massive defense budget, not just to buy it, but simply to utilize it properly. Instead, it's more like a technology akin to a computer, or maybe in a warfare sense, it's a parallel as, you know, the AK-47. The barriers to entry are pretty low because while in some ways the technology is very sophisticated, in other ways it's quite easy to utilize. And so Great Britain or France, China, Russia, Iran, Pakistan, all have entered these into their forces. And of course, just like what's happening in war, this is a technology that's not just limited to state actors. And so everything from the Hezbollahs of the world to individuals, a criminal gang in Taiwan a couple months ago that carried out a jewelry heist using tiny robotic helicopters.
And Peter Singer, you just mentioned China. Scott Shane, a reporter for the New York Times, reported recently on an air show in China where 25 models of remotely controlled aircraft, drones basically, were unveiled, including a video animation of a missile-armed drone attacking a U.S. aircraft carrier. So what is the risk that at some point the U.S. will not only be using drones on other people in countries, but we will see drones being used on us?
The question isn't whether the technology is going to be used or not. The way of answering that question is more, are we going to get into wars with these various nations or not? If we do, then they're going to use them. It's a tool that they have just like we have. A couple years ago at that very same trade show, there was only one company that was showing off its new technology that it had. And it was an American company, and they were sort of the toast of the arms trade show. Now, flash forward just a couple years to over 25 other systems being shown off by Chinese companies. And so it means that the dominance isn't just an American one now.
Just like the computers of the 1980s are nothing like the computers of today in terms of their size and what they're capable of. Same with drones. So maybe you could walk us through their first use, which I believe was surveillance, but has expanded far beyond that.
I think computers is a great parallel, but you know, I love history. Another great parallel is the airplane. The airplane, first it was science fiction, flying machine. Then the Wright brothers build it, and then someone says, well, let's use it in war. And they use it for observation, for surveillance. And then someone says, well, I see the bad guys on the ground. I want to do something about it. And so they jury-rig arm these early airplanes. They bring their own bombs up with them. And then someone says, well, you know what, we should specially design these for war, bomber planes, fighter planes. And then all of a sudden they start thinking of all sorts of new ways they can utilize these systems, you know, everything from postal delivery to transportation to medical evacuation, you name it. What's fascinating is that very same cycle has happened with unmanned airplanes. So first they're science fiction, then they're invented. Their first use for surveillance, the Predator originally was unarmed. Then someone says, well, we can see the bad guy. We want to do something about it. In this case, the bad guy was actually Osama bin Laden back in the summer of 2001, which leads to us arming the Predator. Initially, it's jury-rigged. The Predator isn't designed to carry weapons. It can only carry one weapon that's originally designed to be on helicopters. And then they go, you know what, this is working, but we should specially design them for war. But we're also seeing all sorts of other roles as well. Cargo delivery. There are unmanned helicopters that are going to fly cargo back and forth. Medical evacuation bots. So the point is this proliferation isn't just something that's happening globally. It's also happening in the roles and functions that they take on. And, of course, hand in hand with this is the growing intelligence of these systems and their ease of use. So, you know, they're not systems that are remotely piloted anymore. They're systems that can take off on their own, land on their own, fly mission waypoints on their own. They're not deciding who to strike or not. We're not in the Terminator world yet, but they certainly are a step above the earlier generations, the Model T Ford version earlier.
Peter, drones are now being used for a number of tasks, not just for war. The state of Texas, for example, uses them for border patrol. Give us some other examples of how drones are being used.
The Global Hawk is unmanned replacement for the U-2 spy plane. It's the size of a small passenger jet. It's normally used for surveillance over Afghanistan or Iraq or other places. But they've also redeployed them for other uses. So, for example, in Northern California during the forest fires there to help find out what was going on. In North Dakota when there was flooding. When the Japanese, when the earthquake happened and then they had the nuclear reactor crisis, it was unmanned systems that flew above the reactor. That's with a military type system. But then we're seeing, you know, all sorts of other civilian uses. In Japan, they use unmanned systems for crop dusting. They have robotic nurses, robotic babysitters. In Australia, they've used them for lifeguard duty. Law enforcement side is very interested in this field. The Miami-Dade Police Department, also in Ogden, Utah, they've sought special licenses for drones to be used in sort of a similar role to how we use police helicopters. They still have to work out both the federal aviation questions that surround this. How do you deconflict the airspace of manned and unmanned systems? Congress has said the FAA needs to figure this out by 2015. We'll see whether they do it or not. So you've got this airspace deconfliction problem, but then they also, again, have a policy and legal problem to figure out, because when you have that all-seeing eye in the sky, on one hand, It's great because it might detect crime that would otherwise go undetected. On the other hand, you have someone peering into your backyard without a search warrant.
The U.S., which at this point at least seems to have the monopoly on drones, has really opened that Pandora's box. You know, for example, the U.S. military is now relying so much on drones and has found itself defending its use of drones. I wonder if you think, as other countries inevitably begin to use them for military uses as well, will we be so willing to accept their reasoning for why they're justified in using drones? Are we prepared for that flip argument?
So we're clearly setting some potential precedents. The challenge that, you know, may come back to certainly cause problems for us in the future isn't so much the military side of it. We've been very careful to utilize them in a way by the military, by the U.S. military, that, you know, follows the same kind of rules and restrictions that we would have with manned systems. I think where it gets a little bit dicier is on the not-so-covert side, not by the military, but by other agencies, by the CIA, which has utilized them, you know, around the world in a lot of different places, and yet we haven't been all that clear about what is the authorization, what are the rules of engagement that they operate under, and what does it mean when you move what had been a weapon of war into other areas. So, you know, I think the question of having the CIA do this isn't that the CIA is staffed by bad people. It's though they follow a different set of rules and standards. The lawyers involved are not military JAG officers who are following military procedures. And if they mess up, there's a court-martial system. And an intelligence agency, first, you know, you have deniability. You don't admit to that you're doing it. That's why it's covert. But then the people involved are civilians. And I think that's where people are concerned about the lack of clarity about it, particularly as we get further and further away from 9/11 and start involving more and more groups that aren't Al-Qaeda core, that aren't the base. Then the legal justifications get even more stretched.
A reporter for Wired magazine, Noah Shachtman, recently reported about a virus in some U.S. drone systems. That raises the specter that someone else, some other country, perhaps an enemy, could commandeer our drones and we'd lose control of our own equipment. In your view, how dangerous a development is this virus situation?
Well, I got to give a shout out to Noah, because not just for Wired, but he's also a colleague here at Brookings. So it's a great story, a fascinating one that he broke. The danger that he pointed out was more an issue right now of cybersecurity. Essentially, what happened is that the systems were supposed to be what they describe as air-gapped in a certain way. They weren't supposed to be linked to other systems, and so that's how you could keep bad stuff from getting in. But what was happening was that they were bringing over files, map updates and the like, and plugging them in, and in the course of that, carried over some malware with it. It's a lot like how, you know, in your own businesses, computers, there are some things that you're just not supposed to bring onto the network, and every so often someone does and compromises the broader set. Mm-hmm. That's what happened here. Now, in this case, it was a keylogger. It basically tracked the input being put in. It's unclear whether it was anything that had to do with espionage or the like. A lot of computers get infected by these keyloggers. So we're not there in terms of the, you know, Hollywood scenario of drones being taken over remotely. But this is certainly something that is a scenario maybe 5, 10, 15 years down the road, because what you're talking about is you move to utilizing more and more systems where the human isn't located inside of them, where they have more autonomy. You start to enter into what I call the possibility of battles of persuasion, where the goal may not be to blow up the enemy system, but to co-opt it, to persuade it to do what you want. And that's the fascinating cross of two new realms in war, robotics and cybersecurity, two of which are the fastest growing areas of the defense budget, but they also have huge implications that, you know, take us into directions that we've just never seen in war before.
Peter, thanks very much for talking with us about this.
Thank you.
Peter Singer is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, where he's also director of the 21st Century Defense Initiative. His latest book is Wired for War, The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century.